Monitor, I'm Ted Steele with something old, something new in music. Zorba by Percy Faith. I'm Ted Steele, and Barbara says it for us all as we look forward to New Year's Eve and the fresh 12 months stretching ahead, and we hope to life in general.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and flutter. Like candy in the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain, I pray. But whether on the rose of sheer perfection, a freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder of a shiny eye.
The situation escalated today when the Israelis launched a retaliatory attack on Beirut Airport. Right now on Monitor's open line, NBC News' Lou Wood gets the latest news in this developing story from the NBC man in Jerusalem, Al Potashnik. Hello, Al. This is Lou Wood in New York. Do you hear me?
Yes, I do, Lou.
Describe exactly what happened in this raid at Beirut today.
Well, this raid seems to have had the typical characteristics of Israeli retaliation raids, such as we've seen before into Egypt and into Jordan, clean, almost surgical in character, aiming for high damage and low or no loss of life if possible.
Were there any casualties as of the latest reports?
The Israelis say that they suffered no casualties, and to the best of their knowledge, they didn't hurt anyone at Beirut Airport, and they went way out of their way to try not to.
What is your impression of the operation? You described it as clean and surgical.
Yes, the Israelis had planned it very thoroughly. They came in with loudspeakers. They warned the people at the airport to get out of the way in Arabic and in English. Those who were too shocked and too dazed to react to this were pushed out of the way. They dropped smoke bombs on the main roads leading from Beirut to the airport to tie up traffic and prevent reinforcements from reaching the airport. The entire operation seemed to have taken just about an hour. They went in and searched every plane and every installation before blowing it up. And they got out of there with a minimum of fuss and without, as I said before, any casualties.
You may or may not know, Al, that the United States has strongly protested this act to the Israeli government. What do you think the consequences are apt to be?
Well, I don't think by any means that it will stop the Arab terrorist attacks. It may make the Lebanese government a little more wary about giving open support to the terrorist groups that are based in the Lebanon. It may make the other Arab countries that operate airlines a little more wary about allowing their terrorists to use Israeli El Al as their objectives, but it will not stop and probably won't even slow down the terrorist campaign against Israel.
One brief one, Al. Do you think this could trigger a renewal of the Mideast war?
No, I don't believe it could trigger a renewal of the war. The Arabs aren't ready for it. The Russians don't want it. The Israelis certainly don't want it. And incidents of this type are purely localized and are not going to spread any war in the Middle East.
Thank you, Al. That was Al Potashnik of NBC News in Jerusalem talking to us here in Monitor in New York. Lou Wood, NBC News, reporting. Thank you, Lou. There's one musical certainty you can bet on for 69. More recordings from Frankie Lane. And here's the first of his new ones.
Born in the heat of the desert, my mother died, given me life, deprived of the love of a father, blamed for the loss of his wife. You know, Lord, I've been in a prison for something that I've never done. It's been one hill after another, but I've climbed them all one by one. But this time, Lord, you gave me a mountain. No! shire with the green and the sky so tired of working for nothing, tired of being my wife. She took my one ray of sunshine, she took my pride and my joy, she took my reason for living, she took my small
Monitor Beacon. What NBC News is to the nation, WNBC News is to New York. Worldwide or citywide, our coverage is complete. For in-depth analysis, comprehensive coverage, and the latest details of New York news, New Yorkers turn to WNBC Radio 66, New York.
WNBC Radio 66, New York.
This is the week that proves to most of us that the strongest ties between Christmas Day and New Year's Eve are patience and fortitude. What's a New Year's Eve party without music? And NBC Radio's all-star parade of bands will help you welcome 1969 with the widest variety of sounds around today. We'll rock the New Year in, we'll rag it in, we'll soul it in, and we'll swing it in. We'll big band it in, and we'll trio it in, blow it in, and banjo it in. From just after 11 New York time until nearly 4, we'll follow it across the country. With Duke Ellington, Harry James, Lawrence Welk, Your Father's Mustache, Kirby Stone 4, Lionel Hampton, New Christy Minstrels, and other all-star groups. From Times Square to Hollywood, the year will step off to a lively start, because NBC Radio's giving it the downbeat. That's Tuesday night, the all-star parade of bands. And the music says it in the liveliest way. Happy New Year! Claudine Longet, lovely accent and all.
To love you now would be the sweetest thing. To know.
everybody's going around these days saying Happy New Year, except Dr. Joyce Brothers. Dr. Joyce has a more scientific question. What's happy?
If you were to pick the happiest person in the world, would you choose someone with youth, beauty, brains, money, or leisure? Or perhaps a combination of these things? Recently, a psychologist gleaned the studies on happiness and drew a composite portrait of the person most likely to find happiness today. Would you believe that he pictured a not-too-bright, overworked, middle-aged woman who periodically loses her cool and shouts and throws things? This unlikely heroine is happier than a man, one research team concluded, simply because she's a woman. Women, it seems, have a greater capacity for happiness. They tend to be realistically content with what they have. Men, on the other hand, are more apt to be restless and dissatisfied, no matter what their blessings. The fact that the lady is overworked is another plus. Work, not leisure, brings happiness, according to sociologist Kenneth Hildebrand. That's particularly true if it's work done for others rather than for wealth. And women's work more often qualifies in this regard than the work men do in pursuit of the dollar. As for leading a life of Riley, forget it, says the expert. That is, if you really want to be happy. Those who have no work to do find more boredom and frustration than delight, he maintains. And if you think the young are the happiest group in our society, you're wrong, according to a University of Wisconsin research team. These investigators found that those between 28 and 48 years of age were the happiest people. A University of California research group made another unexpected discovery. They found that at any age, a person is happier if he's not too bright. It seems that a high IQ is too often used to keep its owner keenly aware of his own discontent. As for the idea that happy people never get angry, not true. A survey conducted in France showed that people who always appeared calm were neither as healthy nor as happy as those who exploded and got it over with. Once these people blew off steam, they went back to enjoying life. The non-explosive types diluted their pleasure with secret grievances and resentments. So if you're an overworked, middle-aged woman who sometimes does stupid things and sometimes yells at the children, be glad. If the psychologists are right, you're potentially the happiest person in the world. Who could ask for anything more? This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Dr. Joyce, I hope you understand what I'm about to say to you and are not offended, and accept it in the kindly spirit in which it's offered. Happy New Year. Football bowl games were played today. Missouri won the Gator Bowl, stunning Alabama 35-10. In the blue-gray game, the gray on top, 27th, make it 28-7. Auburn won the Sun Bowl, downing Arizona 34-10, and the West beat the East in the annual Shrine Game 18-7. Tripper. Monitor shares your holiday at home or on the move. In New York, a nice place to visit and to live in, we're heard on WNBC. I'm Ted Steele, your Monitor host.
Just one break. If you are an employer or personnel manager, you can use the services of Just One Break Incorporated, the unique, no-fee, non-profit agency whose professional staff will help you fill your job openings with competent, qualified, handicapped workers. For details, write to JOB Incorporated, 717 First Avenue, or call 986-0044. The handicapped worker cares about his job.
My name's Brad Crandall. I do a telephone show on WNBC Radio 66 New York weeknights from 9 until midnight. If you'd like to hear intelligent answers to perplexing problems, join me right here while I listen to Dr. Joyce Brothers weeknights at 7:45.
The name of the game is Fortune Phone, and you could be a winner. Learn how on WNBC Radio 66, New York.
This is John Wolf, WNBC News. It's 8:30, 52 degrees in New York and raining. The United States has issued a strong protest to Israel over an Israeli commando raid on the Beirut, Lebanon airport. The State Department has asked its ambassador in Israel to seek a meeting with Israeli officials at the earliest possible moment. The raid left at least 9 to 12 aircraft damaged or destroyed and inflicted heavy damage on the field itself. The Israelis said the attack was in retaliation of a two-man Arab attack on an Israeli jetliner Thursday in Athens, Greece. There were no casualties, or at least no reports of casualties, at Beirut. Meanwhile, Jordan says its troops exchanged gunfire with the Israelis for 90 minutes in the northern Jordan Valley today. Two men wearing ski masks and carrying a machine gun hijacked an armored truck in Boston tonight. The bandits got away with an estimated $500,000 in cash. President-elect Nixon met with his top foreign policy advisors in Key Biscayne, Florida today, and reportedly asked them to draw up a range of options on Vietnam policy. The Apollo 8 astronauts have left Hawaii and are on their way home. They are expected to arrive in Houston early Sunday morning. President Johnson has called on Democrats to support the Nixon administration when it offers sound and acceptable programs, and to use their own initiative when it does not. City officials say the number of New Yorkers without heat is declining. The health department says there's been a significant drop in the number of complaints about lack of heat. The department says the backlog of fuel orders should be filled within the next 2 days. Although the heat crisis appears to be lessening, the flu epidemic continues. More than 2,000 persons were inoculated with flu vaccine today. Health Commissioner Dr. Edward O'Rourke says that beginning tomorrow, buildings or apartment complexes that have 100 or more elderly persons seeking flu shots can have a health department doctor and nurse team visit them. The plan is aimed at sparing the elderly a trip to health centers. The 22 health centers will also be open tomorrow. A spokesman for the blood program says there was a good response by donors today, but that more donors will be needed until the epidemic subsides. The death rate in the city for the past week was 500 above the normal average. Governor Rockefeller says the state will spend nearly $1.02 billion on social services during the next fiscal year. Rockefeller unveiled the budget proposal today. He added that he still believes the federal government should absorb all welfare costs. The government, says Rockefeller, causes spiraling costs to place too heavy a burden for welfare on states such as New York. Board of Education Vice President the Reverend Milton Galamison says that if the state legislature does not pass a strong school decentralization bill, the people will go ahead as if it existed anyway. Galamison said he hoped Governor Rockefeller would back a strong decentralization bill. The Board of Education has announced a state-financed program aimed at advancing quality integrated education in New York. The board says the state will contribute $750,000. The plan will help communities correct racial imbalance in their schools. A reminder, all of the city's 900 public schools will be closed on Monday and Tuesday. Warm temperatures over the metropolitan area continue to produce fog conditions. The fog is expected to lift later tonight, but in the meantime, driving is hazardous in some locations. There are problems at some airports. Newark Airport is closed to landings and takeoffs. LaGuardia reports delays of up to 15 minutes. Kennedy is operating normally at this hour. Upstate New York is being pelted by rain, sleet, and road conditions are poor. The forecast, partial clearing, windy and colder toward morning. Low temperatures around 30. Windy and cold Sunday, high 35 to 40. The present WNBC temperature is 52 degrees and it's raining. This is John Wolfe, WNBC News. Now back to Monitor.
I'm Ted Steele, and how fortunate for Monitor that we have Joe Garagiola around. Joe is a serious and talented reporter, but he's also blessed with the gift of the light touch and an ear for the comic. Here's a fond look by Joe at some of the fun of the 1968 sports scene.
This is the time of year when members of the press, radio, and television sit down and take stock of the year that is ending. And the idea is to review the important events of 1968. Well, as I look back on the news of the sports world of 1968, I recognize that here, too, it was a year of change. But some things never change. One of the things that remains constant is the fact that you never really know what you might hear said into a microphone. And during 1968, it was my pleasure to talk to a lot of the celebrities of the sports world. And we talked about a lot of different subjects. Some were important things, and some were very serious. But tonight, I'm thinking about the lighter side of what I heard during the past year. After all, the world of sports is supposed to be, although it isn't always, a world for fun. The serious things you can read and hear about in those year-end reviews that I mentioned before. But now, for a few minutes, let's take a look at the other side. One of the happier stories of the year was the announcement by the Atlanta Braves that they were signing the veteran Satchel Paige. Satch is a man who has probably pitched in more ball games than any man who ever lived. It's only natural that along the way, he'd form some pretty definite ideas on how to get the job done. One Paige theory is that you pitch every batter low and outside. Satch feels that those are the toughest pitches to hit out of the ballpark. Of course, hitters who know this have a tendency to lean across the plate. And I asked Satchel Paige if he had a way to handle such hitters.
I take the top button off, see, if he gets on the plate, see, because I got to have a little part of that plate, too.
You take the top button off?
Oh, yeah.
What did you tell that one fella? Your control was off?
Yeah, it was off. I missed the top button. I hit the second button.
You might think that Satch is kidding, but when he talks about control, you'd better listen. Mr. Paige once gave a demonstration of control to some young pitchers. And he threw 19 pitches over out of 20. Now, not over home plate, over a matchbook cover. Most of the year-end reviews of sports will mention that Gordie Howe of the Detroit Red Wings scored the 700th goal of his career in 1968. Since no other player in hockey history has scored 600 goals, you get the idea that he can play. But you might also get the idea that he's some kind of machine. He's not. He's a man. I had a chance to talk to Gordy, and I asked him about his sons, of whom he's very proud, and whether they might someday follow in his footsteps. He talked first about his two older boys, and then got around to talking about number three.
The funniest thing ever happened with him was one day I'm up at 6 in the morning. I fed him and run him off. My wife has to take the other two elsewhere, so I'm down at the rink watching him, and there's a goal scored, and he threw his arms in the customary way in the air and yelled, "Yay!" And I called Moore. I says, "Murray," I said, "the other team scored." And he said, "Well, how should I know what side I'm on? He's a comic," and I enjoy these moments with him. But if they can make a living out of a game of hockey, it has treated me so well, I can say nothing but I wish him the very best.
It's an excellent arrangement, because while hockey has been good to Gordie Howe, he has been good, too, and for hockey. Sports can be good to the men who play them. And one man who's proving that is the player coach of the Boston Celtics, Bill Russell. Russell signed a $200,000 a year contract, and I had a chance to discuss that with his boss, Red Auerbach. Auerbach explained that the contract covered not only Russell's playing and coaching abilities, but also other activities that Russell would be engaged in for the owners of the club. And that made me wonder if Russell would be working for his bosses the year around. And I asked Auerbach, and here's what he told me.
No. He's got that Hollywood bug. He's a nut.
He wants to be an actor?
He wants to be an actor. He's been in a, a recent segment of It Takes a Thief.
Uh-huh.
And this Robert Wagner hit him right in the gut. And Bill Russell looked down at him and said, "You kidding me, Buster?" He threw him up against the wall. And then some gal hit him on the back of the head with a bottle. He's too much.
There's no question that Red Auerbach is a different kind of general manager. He's got a player coach who's so valuable to his team that he's paid $200,000 a year, yet Auerbach laughs about him getting hit over the head with a bottle. Show business and sports is a combination that's getting to be more and more popular. In 1968, the most publicized case of that was Detroit Tigers pitcher Denny McClain. McClain became the first 30-game winner since 1934 and also the most publicized organist. As a kid growing up, McClain obviously played a lot of baseball, but he still managed to find time for his music lessons. Thanks to television, newspapers, and magazines, most people know what a 30-game winner looks like. Here's what a 30-game winner sounds like. Music fans, Denny McClain was playing a song called More. The success of Denny McClain brought the spotlight back on other pitchers who had been 30-game winners. Helmet. I just thought it might help as you listen to Diz talk about Frisch.
Yeah, you know, he said, used to, you know, they out of here, we didn't have them hammers they hit with now. Were they on their head?
Yeah.
And we used to dust fellas off once in a while, Joe, you knew that.
Yeah.
But they didn't throw at nobody to hurt them. They just wanted to let them know that they was out there, see? They didn't want to keep everybody away.
Sure.
And, but right now, Frisch, when he sees these guys with these hammers on their head, he said he'd like to see Dean throwing at them bell ringers now.
You know what he said? He said old Diz would be able to play a tune.
Well, you know, I always tried to make hitters respect me because I respected all hitters walked up that plate. And after all, it was our bread and butter out there. I know I was pitching against the ball club one time. The fellow came up to the plate. And you know how, Joe, how they used to dig those holes in, get all set, and the umpire standing out to one side holding up till the batter got all set, and the old pitcher standing out there waiting he got set?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this hitter this particular day dug him a good hole in there, you know, and got all set. And I called time, and I walked in, and I said to him, I said, "Now, I hope you got you a good hole, because I'm going to try to bury you in it right there." But that's those days, you didn't mean to hurt nobody, but you played for Keith, brother.
That's right.
According to one man who figures to know what he's talking about, so do jockeys. These days, all horse races are covered from start to finish by a film patrol. The idea is to see that nothing happens on the racetrack that shouldn't happen. I was talking about that one day with the man who was probably the greatest jockey of all time, Eddie Arcaro. And I asked Eddie, as a man who rode before and after the film patrol was adopted, just how much difference it made to the men who ride horses for a living.
Well, it's a rough game. I've always said that if you turned 50 jockeys loose at the beginning of the year and didn't have any rules, that there'd only be one jockey left after about 6 months. They'd kill one another.
It gets that bad.
Yes, it does.
But all the tough little men aren't jockeys. At least one is, or was, a baseball manager, Eddie Stanky. Losing is something that Stanky has a problem living with. During the 1967 season, Stanky lost a ball game one day in Minnesota. He closed the clubhouse to visitors after the game. And when Stanky said nobody could come in, he meant nobody. Now, one of the men that Stanky locked out was a fan who wanted to say hello. The fan also happened to be the vice president of the United States. And the incident got a lot of publicity. And Stanky had some fun with the press by saying, "What I need in my clubhouse are hitters, and Humphrey can't hit." Nobody laughed more about it than the vice president himself. And early in 1968, at the Washington Baseball Writers' Dinner, Mr. Humphrey decided that it was time for him to speak up on the subject.
Now, actually, though, I want to get on the record here. I really don't bear any grudge against Eddie for locking me out of his dressing room last summer. I've lost a few myself. But I do resent his statement. His statement to the Chicago Press when he said Humphrey can't hit. That got me. And I will admit, when I first came up through the farm system, I was a free swinger who often didn't connect. But in these past 3 years, with some intense coaching, I've not only mastered the hit and run, but am without a doubt the unchallenged master of the sacrifice. And for you Republicans, I go to the right now just as easy as I used to go to the left.
It was just a few days ago that I sat across the microphone from one of the top names in today's show business. The one, the only, the original, Tiny Tim. You might not think he knows his baseball, but just listen.
I can tell you, we're not trying to make you feel good, and this is the real truth, that you were definitely a clutch hitter. I remember the times, many times, you beat the Dodgers when there were two outs and a couple of men on base, and got that single, boy, and that's as big as a home run when you need it. I said that by that radio, and I remember many times when Mr. Ball and Mr. Desmond would broadcast that game, I said, doggone, I don't trust this man up there now. I'd rather pitch to Muzio, because I don't care what anyone says, and when it comes to a clutch moment, and when it comes to a squeaky type of position, there's nothing, there's nothing like facing hitters who, according to the statistics, may be 6th or 5th or 7th. And the point is, every hitter is important. And believe me, Mr. Graziolo, you are some clutch hitter. That's the truth.
Would you just add one more thing, that was not a political paid announcement?
Well, this is the real truth. I'm not kidding anyone. No one's telling me to do this or say this. I would say this.
Your own free will, right?
That's right. Just like I'd say that one of the most underrated men in baseball today, I wish the Dodgers would grab him if the A's let him go, was Danny Cater. This man,
that's good. Let's get back and talk about my hitting some more. I was a good hitter, huh?
Definitely, Mr. Graziolo, a great clutch hitter.
You're on the monitor, Beacon.
This time of year, adult New Yorkers run the greatest risk of getting hit while jaywalking. Your traffic department cautions that crossing the street in the middle of the block is a major cause of casualties. When you step into a traffic lane unexpectedly from between parked cars, drivers are taken by surprise, often too late to stop. So make this holiday resolution for the new year. Cross at the green, not in between. It's a way of life.
Sometimes the Long John Neville Show comes to you in livid color. This is Long John inviting you to join me midnights right here on WNBC Radio 66 New York.
WNBC Radio 66 New York.
As always, Joe Garagiola has more good stories to tell. This year wasn't too happy for some sports figures. Bob Gibson pitching his heart out in the lost cause. Roberto DiVincenzo losing a golf championship through a scorecard error. Floyd Patterson not getting a decision many thought he should have had. And a Derby winner who wasn't a winner. But those aren't the subjects Joe wants to light touch upon.
There were some people who found 1968 to be anything but unhappy. One was a Mr. Orenthal Simpson of California, better known as O.J. Simpson. He flew through the Southern Californian's opponent so much that it looked like the only way to stop him was to hijack him and fly him to Cuba. Simpson was everybody's All-American and led his team to their Rose Bowl date with Ohio State. But as the season drew near to a close, O.J. turned into more of a football fan than a football player. He'd been confined in his rooting to USC, but when the season ended, he turned his attention to the professional scene. It was generally acknowledged that O.J. would be the first pick in the football draft. That first pick would go to the team with the worst record. And when I talked to Simpson, the competition was hot and heavy. In the National League, the Philadelphia Eagles were on the bottom. And in the American League, it was the Buffalo Bills. I asked O.J. how he was rooting.
I saw the whole Philadelphia lose.
You have a preference for a West Coast team.
Yes, but preferably an NFL team, too. And the way it looks now, it's Buffalo and Philadelphia. And I just hope Philadelphia beats Buffalo out as the worst team in football.
And that right there might have been one of the most historic moments of the year. It was one of those rare occasions when O.J. didn't get what he wanted. The Eagles won the game, and Buffalo won the O.J. Simpson Opportunity Award. I guess that one of the highlights of the year for me as an interviewer came on the evening of the National Cartoonist Sports Banquet. I was interviewing one of the most brilliant stars of the American theater, that master of the English language, Mr. Rocky Graziano. I didn't know at the time that we were to be interrupted in a very special way by another of the golden-throated stars, Mr. Jake LaMotta. I was thinking of Rocky's life story, Somebody Up There Likes Me, which had become a successful book and a movie starring Paul Newman. I asked Rocky if he ever went back to visit his old neighborhood.
Well, once in a while I go back to the old neighborhood, and I'm very, very disappointed. There's none of my friends there no more. Everybody moved out of my old neighborhood. Now they got the hippies and yippies and what and hippies and Jake. I'm talking, Mr.
Hey, I didn't think I would ever see that. Jake LaMotta just kissed Rocky Graziano.
Yeah. Hey, Jake, you, of course, you know, Joey.
Yeah, Jake, you wanted to find yourself? Is that the way you guys always treat each other?
No, me, my boy, Rocky, and I, we were brought up along, you know, many, many years ago down the Lower East Side of New York City, and we also finished doing a picture together. It's called Sixth Chance for Cupid. And Rocky and I, we do a pretty good job. We also have four other guys in the picture do a pretty good job.
Who are the other four guys?
I got Willie Pep, Tony Zell, Patty DeMarco, and Petey Scalzo.
You have to be a fighter to get in this picture?
Well, the picture's finished.
Do you think you talk worse than him, Jake?
Well, no. Rocky is really the first guy that gave me diction lessons. You know, he really did.
Was he a good student, Rock?
I tell you, Jake's a very good student. And happens to be a heck of a good, great guy. And a very good friend of mine. Too bad I didn't fight him. I fought him, I would have knocked him out.
He was afraid to fight because he thought he was going to kill me. He really was.
Joe, I told you. I happen to like Jake. That's why I didn't fight him. I would have knocked him out.
You would have.
I really would, Joe.
Jake, you just stand and agree.
Nah. Well, you know, after all, take it from where it comes. You know what I mean? He's a poor guy. He's a nice fella. He should have had that last fight, buddy. Jake, there's nothing wrong with me. Jake, there's nothing wrong with me because I've been doing very, very good on commercials. I'm doing very good with my movies and shows. I'm on the Mark River Show. Answer that phone, please.
Somebody up there really likes him. It's a true story. I'm also writing a book and do a picture of my life story. I'm going to call him. Nobody down there wants me.
Look for a while this year, too, as though somebody down here didn't like Joe Pepitone. There was some talk about outlawing sideburns, and Pepitone was obviously one of the targets. He said he wouldn't go along with the bosses if they made him cut his hair. As you might guess, hair is very important to Pepitone. Now, while other batters talk about the handles on the bats they use, Pepitone talks about different handles on combs. You don't believe me? Listen.
Because on damp days, it's hard to get the comb through your hair, so you have to use a real fat-handled comb because of the spray net. You know, when it's damp, the spray net gets like a rock up there, Joe, and to get that comb through your hair, you have to use a fat-handled comb so it won't snap in your hand. But on nice, warm days, Joe, when you just put a little spray net in, your comb goes right through. You use a nice, thin-handled comb. You just whip it, zap, right through your hair. That's the best way.
Joe, it's always different talking to you. Are you doing anything different this winter?
Yes, I'm trying to get over my shyness.
There were things that I wished hadn't happened, but there were an awful lot of things to be grateful for, too, because the games might never end. Well, there you have it. 1968 was a year that had winners and losers, just like any other year in sports. It was an election year and an Olympic year. It was a year of teamwork and dissension. But it was also a year where there were some laughs in the sports world, and I hope that I've been able to bring you a few of them during this time. What about 1969? Well, nobody knows how many records will be broken, how many new champions will take over, or even how many combs Joe Pepitone will use during the season. I hope that you've enjoyed the past few minutes, and I hope, too, that whatever you're dreaming about for 1969 will come true for you. And also that, whatever your world may be like, you'll find some laughs in it. just like I did in mine. This is Joe Garagiola.
Thank you, Joe, not only for your perceptive reporting and objective comments, along with all your colleagues in Monitor Sports, but also for your constant reminders that sports are still part of the human comedy. How can you really thank a man for a million laughs, huh? NBC News on the Hour next. I'm Ted Steele for Monitor.
How would you like to be right all the time? That's right, all the time. Especially when you're trying to pick a house gift, or a party gift, or a holiday thank you gift. Sounds impossible? Then listen carefully. Listen to the oohs and ahs as a great bottle of wine is popped open and enjoyed. Wine, indeed, is the gift that can't miss. It looks right, it tastes right, it's even priced right for you. When you're picking wine, pick the label that can't miss. Monsieur Henri. It's the quality symbol that stands for some of the world's finest imported wines. Pinot Burgundies from France, Pierre Cartier Bordeaux and Blanchard Rosés from France, and famous Franz Weber wines from Germany. Every one of these fine names is practically a guarantee of enjoyment. So next time you're pressed for a gift-giving idea, let Monsieur Henri Wines Limited of New York do the thinking for you with a delightful, delicious, festive bottle of wine. You'll find wines imported by Monsieur Henri in most of the good spirit shops. You can't miss it. Every lovely bottle carries the famous blue label of Monsieur Henri selection. But of course.
Monsieur Henri Wines Limited, New York.
WNBC, Radio 66, New York.